What is going on, crypto family? So today we got Myra Sia coming on the show. She is another successful woman in blockchain. She talks about her history of investing. She's a partner with the Republic. She just launched a podcast. We had a great talk. A lot of interesting stuff that she mentioned in here. I don't want to ruin it for you. So it was really cool to hear how they invest in projects, what she looks for in successful endeavors and things like that. We talk about one of her hidden talents, a hidden skill. It's pretty awesome. Talk about her podcast and a bunch more. So let's go check out the interview. I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? So today we've got Myra Sejo with Venture Unplugged. It's a podcaster. You guys can go download today. Also with the Republic, right? So very, very cool to have you on the show. It's always awesome to have women in blockchain, especially as successful and as smart as yourself. So if you could just kind of maybe give us a little bit of background on yourself, you know, how you got into crypto, how you got into the financial institution game, all that kind of cool stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm absolutely excited to be here.
Anytime.
So I guess I'll start from a little bit from the beginning. So my crypto story really is more an investor story. My first job out of college was working for a hedge fund, Guggenheim Partners. It's about a $3 billion fund at the time where we were investing in other hedge fund managers. There was a fund of funds. And really what I learned there was three things in terms of investing and succeeding at it. One of them was you needed deep technical expertise or at least someone on your team who could really kick the tires and understand the algorithms that were happening. The second piece of it that I learned was that you also needed to understand market conditions. Hedge funds are a lot about timing and you can be either too early or too late. And the third piece of it was people. You're always investing in people and managers, and really it's about relationships that help you get into some of these deals. And building these relationships, you kind of never know where they're going to come back, whether your employee, you know, who's your employee now may come back as a client, as an investor, or as a partner. So those are the three early stage things that I learned before going on to business school. And I bring these up because you'll see they'll come back full circle into how I view the crypto world and investing in there. But so from there, I went to business school and got more involved in startups and venture capital. And right after business school, I ended up launching Princeton University's first seed fund directly for the university. I ended up taking that from zero to 21 investments in about 18 months. That was a super exciting time. I was doing everything from sourcing the companies, due diligence, taking them to investment committee, to then negotiating with them and seeing them through the life cycle of our investment. I loved what I was doing. I also knew that I wanted to get better at it and I wanted to become a better investor. So in order to become better, you want to surround yourself by the best, and what better place than to come down to Silicon Valley. So that's currently where I'm located. And when I moved here to Silicon Valley, as I was talking to a lot of venture capitalists and senior partners, what struck me was two things that were happening. One of them, this was about 2-3 years ago when I moved back here. So as you can imagine, the markets were starting to get hot in like the crypto space, and two things were happening when in my conversations. One of them, I kept on hearing the word blockchain, crypto. At that point, I'm sure you remember, you couldn't even take an Uber without your driver talking to you about the Bitcoin price of the day, and or trying to pitch you something new on the blockchain, stocks on the blockchain, whatever that was. So the words kept on coming up, and I knew that the tides were turning, and this was definitely a market shift in terms of what was happening, and the technology really sparked an interest. The second piece of it that was happening was that in speaking to these partners, in many cases, they felt a little bit overwhelmed by having to learn something brand new. They didn't understand the technology behind it. And they also didn't understand what was happening in the financial markets. So they saw it as disruptive. And in some way, they were a little bit fearful. And as you remember, there were some articles out there that would even say, is VC dead now with these new ICOs? And when you take a step back, what was actually happening during that time, ICOs raised in 2017 around $7 billion. In comparison, the VC world was putting to work around $100 billion. So as you can imagine, when people take 7% of your market, you sit up and pay attention. So part of that drew me into the market and like got me to really do a lot more research, pay attention. And that's when I was looking to make my own investments, and I really needed to get up to speed quickly. And I was introduced to Ken Wynn, the founder of Republic, who was an expert. He had been general counsel at AngelList before and now had founded this new company. And we got to talking about how the crypto space was converging with capital market space, which is something that I was familiar with. And that's when I decided to join them as a partner for Republic, where we help companies raise both in the public and private sector. And that really, you know, took me on, you know, diverged sort of my path into a totally different world and got me going on towards blockchain.
Awesome. A lot of stuff there. So, you know, with Republic right now, I mean, how are you guys seeing the market, right? So are you guys having a hard time, you know, bringing in investments for all these new companies still trying to raise money, or are you starting to see some money come in? How's the ecosystem looking right now for people trying to raise money?
I think the exciting news is that it's picking back up. I think we definitely saw a little bit of a winter, right, which I've already talked about. And so I actually have a funny theory, which I've mentioned before on a couple other places, where I actually never really saw it as a winter. I saw it a little bit more as a hangover, crypto hangover, where everybody had been partying, right, for a little bit too long. And then suddenly it's graduation day and you realized it was a little bit too long. And so what it took, right, was a little bit of months for people to come back to it. But I think what we have looked at, or how people are looking at it now, is a lot more in line with traditional investing, right? You're actually going back to basics, which is crucial and important. And I think some people and some investors certainly got caught up in that frenzy and that, you know, irrational exuberance, and were just throwing money at it. And so there was that natural pullback and market correction. But now with that, I think that now, whether we're coming out of crypto winter towards spring or whatever, however you want to call it, I think it's an exciting new place where you're getting newcomers coming in and people who had, you know, weathered the storm, really just doubling down in the market space.
Gotcha. And with Republic, you know, how many investments do you guys typically do in a month? What's some of your portfolio? And what do you look for, you know, in a project before you guys actually, you know, throw some money at it?
Yeah, so it really varies depending on the quality of projects that we have coming in. We do look at it before we show them to any of the investors on our platform. We do look at it from a traditional sense, where we have, you know, for me, it's centered around these five T's that people call them different ways. There's always that battle of, is it team first? Is it market first? For me, the five T's are really target market, team, technology, traction, and then terms. And when you're dealing with tokens, your token economics really matter. So that's kind of the sixth wild card that, in addition to making a good investment that you're always looking at, that you need to pay attention to. And so with that, for me, I put target market at the top, because I think that you can see even great A-plus teams really fail quickly in a market that's too small or that is just contracting, versus having A minus teams rise to the A plus occasion, right? Who have the bones, who are missing one team member or some parts of it, but within a large growing market, I think that that team can really rise, and it allows for a little bit more opportunities, right, to adjust and pivot that you don't have in constricted market. So that's why I put target market size at top. And then obviously the team just has to be spectacular, you know, with the ability to pivot, because this is a little bit seed stage. You don't have a lot of data points to really assess the team. So you need to have some really strong conviction that that team will adjust and, you know, ask the right questions and come to you for your expertise or whatever else that you need at that moment when they need it.
Gotcha. So what's a few of the projects, you know, on Republic that you're really excited about that kind of hit all those T's?
Yeah, so I think a lot of them. I think because we're an investing platform, we try not to signal any particular ones out, but I'm happy to talk to you about some of my private investments. So I think for myself, one project that really has excited me, and who I was recently talking to, is Blockstack. I think what they're doing right now is really innovative on several different levels. So I'm sure your audience absolutely knows who they are, but just in case, we have some crypto newbies. So Blockstack is a new decentralized internet protocol. What's interesting about them, right, not only are they innovating on the technology level, the project is very ambitious. It's been around for close to 7 years. But I think they're innovating on the technology level, which is amazing. But then they're also innovating on how they're fundraising and that financial strategy. What's interesting about them, they raised from traditional venture capitalists to do their very early stage research projects. Then they raised private sale. And most recently, they were the first SEC approved public token sale, which I think is going to be just one of the first in the market to come. And I think it just opens up the space that we've been waiting for, is how do we do this in a compliant way? Everyone here, you know, is excited to tap into the US market, yet do it in a compliant way. And now that the SEC has gone ahead and approved this one sale, we are seeing an uptick from other applicants come into the market and more applications on the Reg A Plus. And we hope to see other ones approved soon.
Very cool. And so you say you're in the Silicon Valley now, but where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small town, Hollister.
Hey, there you go.
About an hour and a half from here.
Yeah, that's where my grandparents were from. Yeah, awesome.
Oh, really? Yeah. Small world. How wonderful. Yeah, so it's a very small world. You know, my parents were first-generation immigrants. And, you know, they really taught me a lot of great work ethic. So, you know, for us, it was definitely about family education. And those two tenets were always crucial. And I think, you know, that's definitely what spurred me to go from a very small town to where I went. And, you know, having spent some time on Wall Street and coming back, it's really exciting just to be a little bit closer to home.
Yeah, that is a huge change. Yeah, Hollister is very small. They actually kind of, you know, built the highway around it. And so now it's kind of like the kids show Cars, you know, where they kind of built the bypass around Hollister. So people that wanted to go to Monterey or whatnot used to go through Hollister. Now they don't. So I always think of it as, you know, for horses and cattle and stuff like that.
Yeah, we actually do have horses. I'll have to invite you over sometime.
Awesome. So who's like maybe a mentor or somebody that, you know, kind of help, you know, shape your life to kind of, you know, get you on the track that you're on now?
So mentorship, I always find very interesting. There's so many people that I can, you know, think of. And I think, I don't know about you, but they actually vary for me depending on what stage I'm at in my life and also what particular parts of my life I'm trying to tackle, right? Whether it's personal or work. I think there's several people that have served that role. For me, I actually have a wider picture on mentorship. And this is like a small thing, but that I do is I have a gratitude journal and I actually go through even like smaller people that affect my day, like on a daily basis. And this has just been a habit for a couple of years now that I naturally do, because I think it's partially the large people in your life that have, you know, a pivotal change in terms of completely diverging your path to all the small incremental changes that happen daily. So that's just my personal philosophy on kind of mentorship and just being grateful for all the amazing people that come into my life on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's a great outlook. What about books? You got a book that's important to you, something that kind of shaped your life a little bit, you think other people should read and maybe find interest in?
Yeah, so I think on the book question, I'm an avid reader. I actually read like 5-6 books at a time. Wow. But, you know, I could go with some of the impactful books. The traditional books in our industry have, you know, been The Hard Things About Hard Things. But one that people might not know about but might be curious about is Decoded by Jay-Z. I don't know about you, but I listen to a lot of pop, rap, and I absolutely love it. And what I find is so interesting about culture today is that we all know the lyrics. It's one of the very few spaces where we can actually recite an entire story from front to end. Yet most of the time we don't even know what's behind that story. What does it really mean? I know for sure I did it on a lot of these like lyrics. And he actually goes line by line, decodes it, talks a little bit more of like the historical impact. And I think it just changed the way that, you know, I currently perceive music or something that's, you know, partially in the background, partially that you engage with. And also I'm just always fascinated that today in a world where we live around Twitter and very short characters and very short attention spans, that that's still one of the areas that people really pay attention, can really commit to the entire story and remember.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think Jay-Z said, I'm not a businessman, I'm businessman. So,
and that's always, you know, that daily inspiration, right? And I think everybody is a business, right? I think when you talk about the other book that's great, right, is The Startup of You by Reid Hoffman, that you're always thinking about your personal brand and what that means and, you know, where are you going and setting that mission for yourself. I think all those things play into it. And I absolutely love that quote.
Awesome. What about hidden talents? You got any, you know, hidden talents that the world doesn't know about you can tell us about today?
Oh, hidden talents. So right now I'm taking a workshop on improv. So I don't know if that's a hidden talent, but I guess we'll find out.
That's awesome. So you get up there on stage and you just start, you know, just acting or what?
Yeah, I'll invite you to our culmination show. You'll be the judge of that. What are like your talents? I'm actually curious now.
I'm a business builder. That's where I focus most of my energy. But, you know, my entire life's been around, you know, martial arts, building businesses, and coding. So that's, you know, family, God, all that good stuff. But, yeah, that's mostly what I spend most of my time doing. But what's some of the things that they've had you do up there on improv? Like, give us an example.
So I think some of it, what's exciting is really thinking about things in the abstract and adding more context to it. So when you normally ask people like, what's in, like, make an imaginary object, what's in the box, right? And you'll normally answer like, oh, a spoon, right? Which is like the normal answer that you have when you're thinking straightforward and vertically.
Unless you saw the movie Seven.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Seven can definitely take you dark places. But that is part of it. Can you provide context around the spoon? Can you create a larger story from this one single object? You're only instructed to do something very simple. But it tests your ability, right, to be able to then tell a story or bring additional references that people might have into that context. That might change. It's not just a normal spoon. Is it a big spoon? Is it something else, right? But something very small. And I think what it's done is it just helps you think more creatively and view the world a little bit more like a child again, in a way. You have a son, right, you mentioned. And so I'm sure you always just kind of marveled as to where did he come up with this? Because it's just a unique, different outlook that you take. And I think it exercises that part of the brain, which is fun.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. The first thing I thought about was, you know, it's going to have to help build your creativity as well as help you get better, you know, thinking on your feet, right? So when you start getting, you know, hit with weird questions, you come up with some, you know, interesting responses. So
absolutely. Very
cool. What about favorite movies? You got a favorite movie?
Yeah. So my favorite movie is absolutely Fight Club.
I love it. Brad Pitt, yeah. Edward Norton. That's awesome. What's your favorite scene?
Oh my God. Come on. It's gotta be definitely when when he goes over the rules, right? First rule about Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club, but all of it's so exciting, right? You are these voices in your head. We all talk about sort of these different voices happening in your head. And I think there's something in it for everybody, whether you want to just look at it from purely artistic point of view to some of the deeper, themes that they have going on. I think it's one of my favorite movies and incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So if you were a president for the day, what's something you'd change here in the U.S.? Or I guess you'd be president of the world. You could change anything. What would you do?
I could change anything?
Change anything.
Anything in the world. Okay. So one thing that has been on the top of my mind, if I could change anything, absolutely, it'd be mosquitoes. Now hear me out.
Zika?
So first of all, I have a personal thing. I'm allergic to mosquitoes. And they always have, you know, I'm that friend where they find me. So that's me. We could be sitting right next to each other and they'll absolutely just find me. But so that's a personal thing. But I think ultimately in terms of the world, like, would anybody really miss them? I don't know. And, you know, they can prevent, Zika and malaria and all these other diseases. So I think, you know, that's a small win for me and a big win for everybody else.
So the eradication of mosquitoes.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. And then maybe what's something you do for fun? You told us you get improv, but is there something else that you do for fun? Some kind of hobby or anything like that?
Yeah. So for fun, I love horseback riding. As I mentioned, we have horses. And it's just truly amazing to be around these really large beasts and, right. And just kind of befriend them. They definitely smell, you know, fear and excitement. And I love just the ability, right, to be one-on-one and just ride off for a little while. So that's kind of one of the nice hobbies that I get to do when I'm here.
Yeah, horses are incredible. You know, my parents have had them, grandparents had them. It's amazing how in tune they are with the actual, you know, with the rider. You know, if the rider's nervous, the horse gets nervous. If you're showing them, you know, they can kind of feel that fear or whatever that you have, and it actually kind of just resonates through the horse and their performance. So, you know, that's why it's really good for, you know, horses for people that, you know, have, you know, like disabilities and things like that. They're actually really great for, you know, for those kinds of people. So, incredible creatures. All right, last question. So, if you had a time machine, and you could go forward in time as far as you want, you go back in time as far as you want, but you had to stay there.
Oh.
When and where would you go and why?
But you had to stay.
You had to stay. Ooh. You can just peek and come back.
You can't just peek and come back. That ruins the whole fun.
I know, right?
Then that's so interesting. Ooh, I'm torn between the unknown future or the ability to kind of know, but be able to affect the past, right? I think since we're on this show, I might go back to a period in time when Bitcoin was $30 and buy a whole bunch of them. I think that's the easy answer to go here.
That's what a lot of people say. Yep. Yeah. Most, you know, some people say they want to go in the future, but it's like, well, what if you did something wrong here and then you go there and you're homeless? So it might be a bad idea.
Yeah.
But it's been awesome having you on, Myra, and I'll make sure that we put you know, the links to your podcast and to how to get in touch with you and follow you and all that kind of good stuff. So thanks a bunch for what you do in the space and, you know, for what you continue to do. So God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Huge thanks to Myra. Really appreciate you coming on the show, telling us all about the cool stuff that you've done, you're doing. For people that want to check out her podcast, there's a link below. Check it out. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.